Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program that is devoted to the fastest growing and largest segment of society, to those of you like me who have come to know that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, counterproductive, and cannot be fixed. I am Yada. Our phone number, if you'd like to join us, is 877-300-7645. We're continuing to move towards Pesach, Passover, which begins Friday at sunset. In the opening segment of the news, I heard what now makes an eighth story. Yesterday, as I was in my study and looked at the top stories in each of my news feeds, everyone had a common denominator. This one does too, although the common denominator was not stated. It's as if the concept of common denominators no longer resonates in the news media. If you recall, SRN News spokesperson said that the media, the press, is trying to create new rules to protect members of the press as they cover wars. And that it used to be that the press wore a badge that said press and they were viewed as protected non-combatants, and that they were recognized as there just to tell the story. But this past year, some 61 media were killed. Now, why do you suppose that is? This past year, there have only been two wars. There's the war between Sunnis and Shias that is engulfing most of northern Africa and the Middle East. And there's the war that America begat in the Ukraine. To my knowledge, there's not been a single media representative killed in Ukraine. That means that the 61 media representatives, we can't really call them journalists because there are no journalists anymore, were killed while trying to report on Muslim on Muslim and Muslim on Christian and Muslim on Zoroastrian violence. 100% of the 61. That is a common denominator. The common denominator is Islam. So since the rules on treating the press with respect, treating the press as if they were non-combatants, don't seem to be observed in one part of the world amongst one group of individuals, perhaps the problem is not the rules regarding the treatment of press, but instead that the problem is with Islam. Muslims are murderous. Muslims engage in kidnapping, particularly for ransom. They do so because Muhammad was murderous, because Muhammad engaged in kidnapping for ransom. Therefore, Islamic law is the antithesis of international law. There are three examples in the Islamic hadith, which is the basis of the religion of Islam. It is Sunnah, from which the Sunni Muslims are so named. The example of Muhammad. There are three, only three, about the media. Now, at the time that Muhammad lived, Arabia was so backwards, there was no written language. So anyone trying to report to others what had been said were called poets, because all they could do is pontificate in a way that would help people remember, and rhyme and rhythm are used to encourage memory. There were three. All three were women. Yeah, I guess back in Arabia, women were stronger than men. They certainly had more courage than men. They were wiser than men. Maybe they still are. These three women specifically told anyone who would listen that Muhammad was a complete fraud. That this notion that they should kill for him, and that if they were to die killing for him, that they would be rewarded with a multiple virgins in paradise, and if they were to live while robbing and murdering for him, that they could keep 80% of what they stole, these three women said was immoral. That you have to be an absolute nincompoop to believe that this man who is telling you to steal and to murder for him, to rape on his instructions, that this man who authorized and legitimized stealing and kidnap for ransom and the slave trade and mass murder was speaking for God. You have to be an idiot. That was true then. It's true now. There were three women who had the courage to say it. Muhammad specifically asked three of his henchmen, the first Muslims, to go off and murder them. They were the press. Muhammad set the example. Murder them. All three were killed in their bed, in their sleep. Two of the three had babies who were still nursing. All three bring out the Islamic tendency to lie, because each of the three, the henchmen, told Muhammad that to be effective and to kill these women in their sleep, to make them easier prey, that they would need to deceive them. Was that okay in Islam to be deceptive? In Islam, was it authorized to lie? And Muhammad said, yes, I authorize you, Muhammad, or Allah authorizes you to lie. You may deceive them. The legal lie, taqiyya, was born at that time. One of the three killers, one of the first Muslims who became an assassin, came back to Muhammad guilt-ridden. He says, you know, she had four children, two of which were so young they were still nursing. I had to move one of the babies from her breast so I could plunge the knife into her. Killed her in cold blood. I feel horrible. And Muhammad said, not to worry. It's murdering her was less important than, and her life was less important than two goats butting heads on the hill. You see, the problem is with Islam. The problem isn't with the laws pertaining to journalists. You, dear journalist, if you want to refer to yourself that, or press or media, can establish 1,000 laws on how to treat the press. It won't matter, because Muhammad created Islamic law, Sharia, by his example. And his example was to murder them. That's the first now of 8 stories that we're going to focus on this morning that have a common denominator, Islam. Hillary Rotten Clinton evidently wiped out her email server, wiped it clean, permanently deleting all emails from it. The leader of the House committee investigating the 2012 terror attacks in Benghazi said, until I said Benghazi, there wasn't the common denominator. Now there is. Yes, Hillary Rotten Clinton doesn't want anyone to know what she wrote at the time of the Benghazi attacks. Why? Because the story that she has been repeating is wholly fabricated. And by viewing her emails, Americans would come to know how she went about fabricating her story. The fabrication was designed to comply with what she and the Obamanator desire, which is for Islam to be seen as a great and wonderful religion, for Islam to be embraced and uplifted and endorsed, and yet to have extremists of all peculiarities, to have extremists seem to be the problem, that she wants terrorism to be the product of extremists and never associated with Islam. So what did Hillary Rotten Clinton do? Knowing for fact that it was Ansar Sharia that plotted and carried out the murder of four Americans in Benghazi at the American consulate there, and that Ansar Sharia was not only well known to the American embassy staff and well known to the CIA protecting them, allegedly, that Ansar Sharia played basketball with the CIA staffers there. They used the embassy facilities. They were extremely well known to them because the CIA was playing their normal game. They figured that anybody can be bought, so they they bribed Ansar Sharia to allegedly provide them information on the other terrorist, Islamic terrorist organizations that had been unleashed throughout Libya. So, what did Ansar Sharia do? The same thing that every Islamic terrorist organization and member does when dealing with RCIA. They take the money, and they provide bad information, and they learn America's vulnerabilities in the process. Ansar Sharia then attacked the embassy staff and the CIA in their initial cables back to Washington during the attack, said specifically it was Ansar Sharia that was perpetrating this attack. And yet, Hillary Rotten Clinton and the Abominator for whom she worked didn't want that to be the case, because it's really difficult to distance fundamentalist Islam from this murderous attack when the murderers are named friends of Sharia, Ansar Sharia, Islamic law. And it's really embarrassing when your CIA is cozy with them. And it's even more embarrassing when the weapons they are wielding were provided by America. So what did she do? She fabricated the story that this was a spontaneous popular uprising against an extremist film that was reprehensible in its portrayal of Muhammad. That attack had nothing to do with the film. The film wasn't even released. It was just a small trailer. The trailer was actually in English. And it was translated not by the producer of the film, but by an Islamic cleric, for the express purpose of trying to rile up Muslims, and he managed to rile up a few Muslims in Egypt, but not in Libya. And even in Libya, this film, which correctly identified Muhammad as a bloodthirsty terrorist and womanizer and sexual pervert, all of which he is, and undeniably is, that film had zero to do with the attack on the Benghazi consulate. And she knew it. And she knew who attacked the Benghazi consulate. So what has she done now that she's created her fabrication? She obliterates the truth. You see, the truth is lethal to liars like Hillary Rotten Clinton. She wiped her computer clean. We'll be back and conclude this story when we return with Shattering Myths. This notion of Hillary Rotten Clinton wiping her email server clean to hide the fact that she fabricated the cause and consequence of us bombing Libya, of us arming the Mujahideen there, of us creating this hellhole for terrorists in Libya, and of how that backfired and caused America to lose four of its embassy staffers. The reason that story is so important is, A, it highlights this administration's desire to exonerate Islam, no matter how obvious it is that Islam is the culprit. That's really bad, particularly when it's dealing with murder. Number two, to blame extremists, particularly Christian extremists. And so a trailer that had nothing to do with this, didn't happen to be accurate, but wasn't even in Arabic, was the scapegoat, not only by Hillary Rotten Clinton, but also by the Abominator. And it was very difficult for them to do this, which is why there were some 20 emails exchanged between the White House and Hillary and the State Department and the CIA to create talking notes that walked around the truth, which was that it was performed by Ansar Sharia, which is Friends of Sharia Law. Now, I said that at the time, that this had been perpetrated by Ansar Sharia. And, of course, at the time, there was no recognition of that at all by the White House. And I knew it was performed by Ansar Sharia. It was obvious. And, of course, about 6 months ago, the U.S. military went in and picked up and now has in custody the head of Ansar Sharia. And, of course, having done that, they still don't make the connection. That means that the Abominator lied. It means that Hillary Rotten Clinton lied. But this tendency of this administration and the administration prior, the George W. Bush administration, to routinely exonerate Islam when it is routinely guilty, and to routinely condemn extremism when it has nothing to do with anything that's occurring around the world, is the way of political correctness. It is the roadmap to our destruction. People are being routinely lied to. The truth is being inverted. Lies have become pervasive. And as a result, we are crumbling from within. This is the story of America, circa 2015. Reuters is reporting that Islamist groups, including Al-Qaeda's Nusra Front, why in the world they call Al-Nusra Al-Qaeda? You know, when Al-Nusra was first conceived in Syria, they were associated with the Free Syrian Army. They were considered to be freedom fighters. They were all considered to be Syrians who had risen up against a tyrannical dictator. It was only until there was infighting between the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria and al-Nusra that al-Nusra was identified with al-Qaeda, not because they had been conceived by al-Qaeda, not because they were a franchise of al-Qaeda, but because the head of al-Nusra was at least having a discussion with, would at least listen to, the only remaining al-Qaeda member, Ayman al-Zawahiri, while Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi of the Islamic State would not. That's it. So at that point, it became impossible to logically associate the Islamic State with al-Qaeda. Now, they were never part of al-Qaeda. They weren't born from al-Qaeda. They had no al-Qaeda influence in their creation. They had no al-Qaeda influence in their growth. They had no al-Qaeda influence in what they are now. In fact, they are being routinely disavowed by al-Qaeda. Osama bin Laden, when he was alive, used to rail against Ibrahim Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. Hated him. Wrote harsh letters to him, had no influence over him whatsoever. And then you have his successor, Ayman al-Zawahiri, doing the same thing to Ibrahim Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the Islamic cleric responsible for the Islamic State. But because in that rift between the two, Zawahiri sought to form an allegiance with al-Nusra. Al-Nusra is now linked to al-Qaeda, and so it's now including al-Qaeda's Nusra Front. But that's really the wrong way to look at it. Al-Nusra simply acknowledged the instruction from Ayman al-Zawahiri. They weren't formed by him. And what happened then? Well, from that moment on, al-Nusra became essentially irrelevant, and the Islamic State relevant. No one in the media seems to notice that the moment that al-Nusra did its leader signify that it was in harmony with al-Qaeda, and that the Islamic State was wholly and completely opposed and distanced from al-Qaeda, and effectively opposed to al-Qaeda. Well, it was very difficult for the media to let go of the connection between their supposed connection between the Islamic State and al-Qaeda, even though at that point you have to be wholly ignorant or irrational to continue to parrot it, which didn't stop the media from doing so. They never noticed what happened relative to the two of those organizations. You know, it had been the President of the United States saying, we're not at war with Islam, we're at war with al-Qaeda. Well, al-Qaeda's influence is between negligible and non-existent. And so here was al-Qaeda throwing its support behind al-Nusra and condemning the Islamic State. And what happened at that moment? At that moment, al-Nusra was many times larger, many times more successful, had been operating successfully in Syria for a much longer period of time, was much better armed, was in the news every day with one victory after another. And the Islamic State was just for the first time being heard of. In fact, they weren't even the Islamic State then. They were the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. In fact, at the time, I think they were just the Islamic State in Iraq, and we're about to push through the second name and then to the third name. So the endorsement of Al-Qaeda was a determining factor in the all-but demise of al-Nusra and the rise of the Islamic State. So if that doesn't prove that Al-Qaeda is at best meaningless, and at worst, a negative influence in Islamic terrorism, I don't know what more you need. Now, the reality of the situation is that in the fight between al-Nusra and the Islamic State, the Islamic State prevailed. And they prevailed at such a rate that most of the al-Nusra fighters joined the Islamic State, and that ultimately al-Nusra became part and parcel of the Islamic State. But they do have their own one little segment, one little territory, where they seem to still refer to themselves as al-Nusra, which would be northwest Syria, in the area around Homs and other areas, including Idlib, the of the northwestern province of the country. And so yesterday, what we read is that Islamist groups, including al-Qaeda's Nusra Front, have seized the city of Idlib for the first time in Syria's civil war. Fighters had been assailing it for some time. So as we move towards America engaging in this war and trying to thwart the Islamic State, all committed to defeating the Islamic State, obliterating it, al-Nusra captures a major city. By taking Idlib, the capital of northwestern province of the same name, the Islamist insurgents now control a second province after Raqqa, the stronghold of the Islamic State, which has been the target of the U.S. airstrikes. So there's two regional capitals, one in the hands of al-Nusra, which is a de facto part of the Islamic State, and the other solidly in the hands of the Islamic State. Sunni Islamist groups have formed an alliance which includes Nusra, the hardline Ahrar al-Sham movement, and Jund al-Aqsa, but not Islamic State, their rival, which they launched an offensive to capture the Idlib city on Tuesday. You know, that's not necessarily accurate. Al-Nusra was never an independent Islamic terrorist organization. They were always an amalgamation of Islamic terrorist organizations. At any one time, you would find under the umbrella of al-Nusra 8 to 10, maybe even 12, different Islamic Mujahideen groups. They are the same even now, it's just that they're much smaller. Well, much smaller relative to the Islamic State. And the Islamic State and al-Nusra, these terrorist organizations that are a part of it, so this list that they have formed an alliance is misleading. They've always been nothing more than an alliance of Islamic terrorist organizations. That's all they have ever been. So this is nothing new. So it's not, should not be considered news as it's being reported here. And al-Nusra and the Islamic State ceased to be rivals some time ago. And that is because the al-Nusra would have been obliterated had it not been for the fact that their leaders capitulated. All of their senior militant leaders all pledged allegiance to the Islamic State. And so now it's in the Islamic State's interest to continue to have them wear a slightly different badge, because when they're attacked, in addition, and they were during the first bombing raid by America, when they're attacked, in addition to the Islamic State can demonstrate that America is anti-Islam, Americans are killing Muslims. The groups taking part in the offensive to seize the city posted videos on the internet showing fighters roaming the streets. Voices in the videos were heard in the center of the city. The film showed insurgents shouting in the air and chanting, Allahu Akbar, God is greatest. Well, you know, I'll tell you what. It's the first time they've actually used Akbar as greatest. You know, it's usually God is great in the media. And, of course, the worst part of it is Allah is not the Arabic word for God. Illah, and ill from the Hebrew, El, are the Arabic words for God. Allah is the third name given to the God of the Quran. He began as the Lord, and then he became Ar-Rahman, and he didn't become Allah until Muhammad moved away from Mecca into Medina. And it's amazing when it's A-L-L-A-H, and that clearly is the name of the Islamic God, that the people who write for the media can't figure it out. But they would prefer to parrot the politically correct lie than they would tell the truth. And Akbar, as we know, isn't just the greatest. It means older and bigger. Its primary meaning is older and bigger. It's not the principal Arabic word for greater. It is the primary Arabic word for older and bigger. Now, why would Allah want to be known as older and bigger primarily and secondarily as greater? Because he wanted to be seen as God. And if the God of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, Yahweh, is younger, if he is somehow smaller, then he has achieved his goal to be worshipped like the Most High. That is why the chant Allahu Akbar exists. It was conceived specifically against Yahweh. The first time it was used is Kabar, where Muhammad and his goons, the first Muslims, were attempting to terrorize a defenseless Jewish community. And before they began murdering them and robbing them, they shouted, Allahu Akbar, my God is bigger, older, and greater than yours. That's the basis of the whole thing. Well, anyway, they were out shouting, Allahu Akbar, which means that they were confessing to the crime. Al-Nusra wasn't shouting Al-Qaeda Akbar. No, they weren't shouting extremist Akbar. They weren't shouting radical Akbar. They were shouting Allahu Akbar. It's the same phrase that every Islamic terrorist uses. The same phrase that was shouted over and over again in the voice recorders of the airplanes that were flown by suicide bombers into America's buildings on 9/11. Allahu Akbar. Gunmen killed at least 15 people, including an opposing politician, near polling stations in northeast Nigeria. Guess who those gunmen were? Boko Haram. They launched several attacks on voters throughout the northeast, killing three more in the Yobe state and three more in the Gombe state, in addition to the 15 that they killed in their homeland. Shortly afterwards, at least eight people, including the opposition parliamentary candidate for Daku in Gombe, were murdered. The militants who are trying to revive a medieval Islamic caliphate. Medieval, you moron. Listen. Islam was born in a caliphate. Muhammad was the sole dictator. Upon Muhammad's death, Abu Bakr, the namesake of Ibrahim Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the head of the Islamic State, seized control of the Islamic criminal enterprise and war machine. It was a caliphate, a dictatorship over all of Islam at the time. That dictatorship fell in line with a series of warlords thereafter. There was a brief dispute between two parties vying for dictatorial control over Islam, with some choosing Muhammad's grandson, Ali. He was killed, and the Shia uprising was repulsed. As a result, Islam has been nearly wholly unified, with exception of the 20% to 15 to 20% of Muslims who are Shiite, for many hundreds of years thereafter under a caliphate. The Ottoman Empire imposed a similar draconian dictatorial control over Islam. Islam is established to be dictatorial. The Quran and Hadith both say when Allah has appointed the king, the general, over you, you must obey. Just as he had to obey Muhammad and his example and his instructions. Well, in this case, Boko Haram, which has also pledged its allegiance to the Islamic State, is trying to establish Islam as the only acceptable religion in Nigeria. And they are willing to kill everyone who stands in their way. We'll be back. I think there's another common denominator in this story, and I've got a bunch more that follows. We'll not get to them all this morning. A blogger, that would be a member of today's media, has been hacked to death in the Bangladeshi capital of Dhaka a month after a prominent atheist writer was killed in a similar attack. Rahman was attacked close to his home in the business area, a police official told the AFP news agency. Two students at an Islamic seminary have reportedly been arrested for hacking him to death. So, Kirk, when you find out that two students at an Islamic seminary hacked to death a second blogger in Bangladesh in a month's period of time, hacking to death in broad daylight on a public street, do you think Islam might play a role in what they did?
Well, that would be a pretty good assumption, I would think. But of course, they would probably be rewarded them. They certainly wouldn't arrest them. They would be praising them.
Oh, well, they certainly are amongst the public because this blogger, like the previous blogger, had the good sense to say, you've got to be a moron to be a Muslim. And you do. You mean you have to be an absolute idiot to be a Muslim. Complete and total idiot. To believe that the God who is depicted in the Quran, who spends all of his time in hell torturing people, is a God that you would want to meet. Well, why would you think that if you go off and kill everybody on behalf of your God and die in the process of killing others, that your God's going to reward you with eternal life for being a really effective murderer?
Well, it's more than just being an idiot. It's how do you embrace that much evil? I mean, what is in you? You know, even mafia guys get sick over what they're doing.
That's why they have to. A mafia guy has to be made, which means that the mob has to have evidence that they have committed a crime that will cause them to be locked away in prison for very long periods of time to keep them in, and they have to threaten them with death if they try to leave the mob, because it's hard to be that evil.
So, you know, how do you get people to buy into this in this such a large quantity? I mean, I'm talking just out there in the air.
I think there's a lot of things that went into it initially that still play. Many men prefer to be able to take what they want from women. And so if you have a religion that authorizes rape, if you have a religion where women have no rights, where you don't have to treat them with any respect, they and their bodies are for you to use and abuse, and where a Muslim can have as many wives as they want, wives, You know, there's no love in Islam. Yeah. There's no real marriage in Islam. And they can have as many as they want. Yes, I know the Quran says four, and I know Muhammad had four times four. But the reality is that fourth is a rotating spot. Mm-hmm. So with the fourth, you can have as many prostitutes or rape victims or whatever you like. And so I think there's some motivation there just because of the tendency of people without a moral compass to be sexually abusive.
That's part of it. A lot of them.
Yeah, and then for a lot of people, if you give them the choice between stealing and working for a living, that stealing is preferable. If you're living on a government dole, aren't you really just stealing from people who are productive? It's just we've wiped the slate clean and said that it's moral. You're entitled. But wonder what's the difference in Islam, where they just steal, rob people, and kidnap them for ransom.
People, you know, used to be subconscious about about when they'd pull out a food stamp or something. Now, of course, now they give them a credit card, so it's not embarrassing to them. So.
Right. Yeah, and if you're paying attention, even in affluent areas, you'll see countless people paying with their food stamps and buying probably better products than you're buying with their food stamps. 75 to 80 million Americans. Yeah, you're right. It's a form of just taking what doesn't belong to you.
But I don't find a lot of people who want to be that way. I mean, they may find themselves in circumstances like that, but I mean, at least when I was growing up, you just didn't want to be on the
charity lines,
you know?
Yeah, no longer the case. But, you know, here you've got 1.5 billion people who have become so inept morally, so inept mentally, that they're willing to acknowledge their association with the most depraved of all human organizations, Islam.